All right. Hello. Welcome, everyone. This is a non-breaking space show. It's a show where we seek out the best and brightest of the web and ask them how they do what they do. And their hosts are usually myself. I'm Christopher Schmidt. I'm the author of HTML5, co-author of the HTML5 cookbook and also author of the CSS cookbook. Also, one of partners in crime at Environments for Humans. We do a whole bunch of online summits like CSS Summit. We just did three of them back to back, right? Yeah. It's been a big blur this past week or so, but we just did UX Web Accessibility and Content Strategy Summits last week, so it's been kind of a blur. And also, usually my co-host is Dave McFarland, who's also an author and designer, and he authors the missing manuals, JavaScript missing manual, CSS missing manual. I always try to make a joke that he knows where the bodies are buried with the missing manuals, but it never really pays off very well in the podcast. So. Also, we usually have our Chris from Canada, who's our producer, who keeps us on track. And they can't be with us today just because of technical limitations of where we are. But they're here in spirit, and hopefully they're watching us streaming live at the where are we being streamed live, by the way? Unmatchstyle.com. Thank you so much. So hopefully people can watch us there. So our guest today is Gina Bolton. Gina is an interactive designer and artist working and residing in Silicon Valley. She's currently the product designer for Dew. D-O, by the way, not Mountain Dew. Just want to make sure. She co-authored Art and Science of CSS. She's consulted various agencies, including the W3C Web Accessibility Initiative and mass.gov. She holds a BFA in Computer Arts and Graphic Design from Memphis College of Art. She enjoys traveling and learning Italian. Her website can be found at Googling Sushi and Robots. And like I said, Dave and Chris can't be here. And we're coming live, again, streaming live from the Challenger Learning Center in Tallahassee, Florida, specifically the planetarium of the Challenger Learning Center. So I'm very happy to tell you that that you guys are in Tallahassee, because when Gene told me that he was doing Refresh Florida, he said, he gave me a call. I was like, Chris, gotta let you know about something. I was like, hey, what? You know, like, I know you guys, you know, you guys do In Control in Orlando. We want to bring the show to Florida. I just want to make sure that's okay and everything like that. And it's like, oh, that's totally cool, dude. That's awesome. I love Converge SE, which is in South Carolina, right? And it's like, so where are you going to have Converge Florida? It's like, oh, we're going to have it in Tallahassee. I was like, oh, okay, cool. So you're calling to asked me to come speak at Converge Florida because you know that's my hometown, and that's where I got started in web design. And you're really calling them. It's like, yeah, I'm totally doing that. Yeah. So, and you're calling. Let me check the schedule to make sure I'm free that day. So that you're like, so what days are you looking at? And like, so we the whole thing. So I'm really happy. Yeah. So just give a round of applause to Gene and the whole crew for putting it on. And so for putting that on, really happy about that. And also excited for our guest today. Let's give a round of applause for Gina Bolton. Thanks for coming.
No problem.
Cool. So how many people have heard the Non-Breaking Space show before? Oh, wow, awesome, cool. Thanks. So if you want to know more about it, check it out at nonbreakingspace.tv. So has Gina Bolton actually seen the show before?
No. Sorry.
Well, it's a show where we just talk about puppies and cats.
Awesome. Sounds like a good show. Yeah.
Cool. Well, so I talked like a little bit about the intro. Like we talked a little bit about you, about mm-hmm. product designer at Dew. Mm-hmm. What does Dew do?
I've not heard that before.
Okay.
So we're a social productivity application for small teams. We are growing to larger teams too. You know, task management, project management. We are rolling out with a CRM as well. Lots of other cool features coming up. So, yeah, it's just a really cool app for doing work with cool people. So.
Well, like, how did you get started? Because, like, I got started with design at Florida State University, which is, like, stone's throw away from here. Mm-hmm. But how did you get started doing web? And
well, so I always was into design and drawing, and I thought I was going to go into graphic design, like print and advertising.
What made you decide to go into print advertising?
Somebody came and spoke at her school and said they made six figures doing graphic design. And I was like, that's what I want to do. but, you know, that person was super famous. So. But no, I just, I knew I wanted to do something creative. And my dad used to tell me that I needed to stop focusing on art because I would never get paid. Mm-hmm. And that I should focus on science and math and all that. But I wanted to do something creative, and I was pretty excited to see that there actually was a career in the creative field. And so that's kind of where I thought I was going to go. But on this, I guess on the side, I was doing HTML just as a hobby. And
my, how did you pick up HTML? Like, what did you learn about
it? So my dad was playing around with, a long time ago, there was this thing called, I think it was like AOL Home Site or Press, or it was some name like that. It was an America Online thing where you could just push up web pages. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I can put up a page on the internet and people will see it. And I didn't really put two and two together and realize like that could be combined with design. It was just really more of like me putting up garbage fan photos and, you know, collecting animated GIFs and stuff like that. But then when I went to school, I started, I kind of had to pay for myself to go through school.
Mm-hmm. And so which school is this?
Memphis College of Art. Okay. And so I started just doing websites for like local bands. There were a lot of rock bands in Memphis. And then at some point it just kind of dawned on me. I was like, wait, this is it. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to make websites.
And like that was like a new industry, right? So like.
I know there have been people like Zeldman that have been around doing it, but for me, like I just didn't really think about it as a job opportunity. But then once it kind of it became clear that that was what I wanted to do, I just never looked back. And and of course now I'm kind of getting into some like software and mobile stuff too, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, because like when I was in school doing 4-print design and going to learn graphic design, and I was just showing the teacher, like my mentor in college for design, like the web and what stuff to do, and showed her some pages I made. And I said, like, hey, Chris, like you should do web design. And I looked at her, I was like, what the heck is web design? I have no idea what that is.
The funny thing is I remember in undergrad, you know, being really excited about doing web design. And at the time in that program, I think I might have been the only one that was interested in web. Everyone else wanted to work at these design and advertising firms. And it was almost like it wasn't considered a valid form of design. And I remember some of the teachers just kind of pushing that aside, like, no, you know, that's not really what we're focused on. And now they're like growing that program. And everybody's attending that school now to learn web. Right. So it's completely changed.
Yeah, so was there actually, like, so you went to a design program, right?
Yeah, so I kind of did a double major because I started in the graphic design program. Mm. And then they had this major called computer arts that was, like, an all-encompassing umbrella of video, flash, even Shockwave. let me think.
How many people know what Shockwave is?
So I had to play around with director and some motion graphics stuff. It was all sorts of different stuff, but they only really had one web design class. If you didn't count the flash class and all that. And then they had a graduate level web design class, so I was able to get permission to take that one as well. So I got like all my requirements for that, and I still had some electives left over, so I just kind of picked the graphic design path back up and completed those requirements. So I got sort of both interests completed. But yeah, like it's just funny. Like the computer arts program was just like this huge collection of different things. And now I think schools are finally starting to separate those things out as separate majors.
So I also, I'm not sure if this is the same degree or not, but recently, like, or maybe a year or two ago, you went back to school, is that right?
Yeah, so I was, I'm really interested in teaching later down the road, and some schools require a graduate level degree, you know, to even have a part-time job there as a teacher. And so I decided to go to grad school to kind of get that piece of paper to allow me to be able to teach down the road. I have all my classes completed. I just have to get my thesis passed, and then I'm done.
What is your thesis?
So the way the program works is instead of writing a big paper dissertation, you actually create a product and write about, you know, your design process of that product. So I was working on an app for sushi enthusiasts. I really like sushi, and it was just sort of an excuse to kind of try making a mobile app, you know, by myself. But, you know, I was approved to get developer help, and so I didn't have to do everything by myself, but just focusing on the UX and the interaction of it and the way it looks.
So where are you going to school for that? The reason why I'm asking is just because I just want to know what you're, you know, you already know what web development, you're you know, I'm going to say you're famous a little bit, and that you already know the skill set, so you're going back to get, you know, a grad degree.
Right.
How was going to back to school, were they, that what you were taught at the level that you knew the industry was, or was it below, or was it higher, or where was it?
So I was a little nervous when I first enrolled, and I just kind of didn't want to be that kid in class that's like, well, actually, you know, because that would be really annoying. And that I didn't really know what to expect. Like, there were some classes that would be new stuff for me. And so I just kind of sat quietly in class. And the first classes they made me take was the principles of usability. And actually, I hadn't really done a whole lot of usability testing before. And so that was actually kind of cool that I, you know, had to start kind of thinking about usability testing and user research. And it was when we had to start, they waived me out of the HTML class,
so I didn't have to take that.
I was actually devastated that they waived me out of the typography class, because I really wanted to take typography. I love typography, but they highly advised that I not take it. I don't know why. But I did have to take a couple classes where I just sort of sat quietly and just did the work. A girl that was in my class that was reading some article or something by Andy Clark, and I guess he had mentioned me. And in class, she blurted out, like, you're Gina. And I was just like, oh, great. You've ruined my cover.
So there's some courses that were, like, new to you. Other courses were, like,
actually, I did have to take some motion graphic and flash classes through the grad program as well. So that stuff, I'm not good with timeline-based apps. Like, think whether it's video, motion graphics, flash, like anything that's on a timeline. I'm just not good thinking that way. So those I kind of did mediocre.
Well, since you're still waiting for your degree, I won't tell you. I won't probe you more about the state of web education at traditional institutions. We'll follow that back up after you're graduated.
But I will say this. I was impressed that there is a focus on usability there. And that was at Academy of Art. I forgot to mention
Did you have eye tracking in your lab?
They have this crazy app that does all sorts of stuff. It's like eye tracking, and it records the person as they're clicking on stuff. Yeah, they have like a full usability.
I know of at least 12 in Memphis.
Really?
Call back to an earlier show.
Okay. Cool.
So I'm going to change things up, but if there's any questions in the audience, just raise your hand and I'll try to get to them. But are there any questions right now? Okay. Awesome. But so I want to talk about SAS. Are you on Team SAS? Is that what it is?
So I think there's some people asked me about this before. They think I'm on the official SAS team, and that's not actually the case. I'm actually volunteering to help redesign the website, and Berman Painter is also in that task force. He did a workshop today.
Well, could you define, like, what is SAS?
Sure. SAS is a CSS preprocessor, the better one. It just allows you to write CSS more in a more organized and clean way. And if you're doing it right, you can have a cleaner output.
What would be the benefits of using SAS over generic CSS, I guess?
Well, just a huge thing is just the repetition. One of the big things in the Ruby community, and I guess some other developer communities, is the whole dry development thing. Don't repeat yourself. And when you're using things like SAS, there's less repetition in writing the same things over and over again.
Right.
So that's a huge thing. But it also can just help you with stuff, like generating colors, doing functions that help you generate grids that are fluid. Like, you don't have to worry about the math because it helps do all that stuff for you. Right. It's just a lot of cool, powerful tools there.
So it kind of like abstracts out CSS a bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
So and I think it has variables, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so.
Variables are actually what sold it for me.
Yeah.
Just, you know, if you have the same color blue being used in a couple different places, it's nice that you just have one place to define what that hex value is.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then also like the whole mix up with vendor prefixes, right?
Yeah, so. Like it can definitely help. Where if you're using mix-ins, especially if you're using Compass,
mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about, you know, all the different prefixes because it can help you.
Well, and what's Compass?
So Compass is a framework that's built on top of SAS. And so some of the common mix-ins you might find yourself doing, maybe it's like gradient, like the long string of gradient styles. There are all these pre-written mix-ins that can do that for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also got some really cool helper tools. Like it'll generate a grid on your page using CSS gradients, and you just pass in, like, I want the grid to be this wide and this color, and it just, there it is. Right. There's a lot of cool stuff for you. Yeah.
And so a mix-in, I guess, is kind of just kind of an easy idea, but it took me a while to learn how to, I guess, master it, if you will.
Right.
I don't think I've ever mastered mix-ins yet, but it's just you have a pre-formatted type of output that you can just store in variables and just say, you can just pass on variables, like a function,
yeah.
if you will, right?
And you don't even have to pass in a variable. It could just be, like, maybe the clear fix is something you're using a lot. You can write a mix-in for it. Of course, I actually prefer to use extend, which you can tell about after the mix-ins thing, but... Yeah. But yeah, the great thing that makes mix-ins powerful is that you can pass in variables. So if you have a certain style and you want to call on that mix-in, but you want to change maybe the border color but keep everything else the same, then you just kind of pass that through.
Right.
It's really nice.
Right. So you can just set default colors.
Exactly.
And then, but then you can just, like, hey, at this point in time, use the same piece of code, but instead of just and pass it like a variable, if you will, in
right.
JavaScript. Say,
it's like a little override.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And then... but you don't need to use Ruby, right? You can just use, like, CodeKit.
No, not at all. Like, I'm not a Ruby developer by any means. I've worked around Ruby on Rails apps and right. Sinatra apps and even a Merb app. Those are all different flavors of Ruby frameworks. But I just stay in the view layer, which is just, you know, the presentation. And it doesn't even have to be in a Ruby app. You could just be making a static HTML website.
Mm-hmm.
There's all these tools out there, like CodeKit and Live Reload, Scout, Compass app. There's all these tools that basically you don't have to open up the command line. You don't have to program anything, and you just, like, launch it up, tell it where your files are, and it does it all for you, and
right.
you're good to go.
Right, and CodeKit is awesome because you can just say, hey, use SAS.
Yeah.
And it'll also refresh the browser automatically for you, so you don't have to, like,
yeah.
refresh.
Yeah, and that's really handy, too. If I'm a constant... I had this habit of constantly reloading. Even if I already know what it's going to look like, I just reload, reload, reload.
Right.
And it's nice that I don't have to manually do that. It just does it. Especially, right. I have, like, two monitors, so I can, like, code over here and just see the effect over here.
Nice.
Yeah.
So how many people here use SAS? I don't. Okay. A little bit. How many people don't know about SAS at all or when before today? Okay, awesome. Yeah. Definitely check
it
out.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the software application, if you use Mac, is CodeKit. And it's just, it's like $20, $25. I don't know how much it is.
Yeah.
But it's totally worth every penny. So what is Team SAS, if you will?
Right. So there was a while back, there was some back and forth on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody kind of gets a little religious about, like, SAS versus LESS.
And LESS is sort of?
LESS is a alternative CSS preprocessor. Mm-hmm. It's very similar in a lot of ways. Doesn't have all of the feature capabilities that SAS has, but there is a strong camp for LESS. And so it's always kind of funny, like, once anybody mentions anything about SAS or LESS, then you always get that little battle back and forth between the two camps. And just one day, the hashtag Team SAS kind of came about.
Mm-hmm.
And so when so Christopher Schmidt, sorry, Christopher Schmidt, Christopher, yeah, Christopher Epstein, sorry. I'm nervous. So Christopher Epstein, he's actually the guy behind Compass, and he's also on the SAS Core Developer Group, and he was venting his frustrations on Twitter about how designers weren't interested in open source volunteering, and he's like trying to make the case that open source volunteering isn't spec work. And all these people were like, hey, I'll work on it. I'll do it. I'll do it. And I was one of those people. So we ended up putting together a task force to work on it. And I decided Team SAS Design would be a fun name for it. So if you're interested, you can follow on Twitter, Team SAS Design. There's also a Tumblr. So it's our goal, I think, is December 1st, we'll have a new SAS website.
Okay, awesome. December 1st.
Yeah.
Her first.
That's our goal. We'll see.
Yeah, because, like, I'm glad you guys are doing that, because we do the CSS Summit, right? So we've been doing that for 4 years now, and we have Chris Epstein talk for the last, now,
he's,
3 years.
He's so awesome.
He's awesome. But, like, and I would, you know, he said, like, hey, I want to talk about SAS and Compass, and I was like, oh, let me learn more about this. So it was, like, you know, 3 years ago or whatever. Right. And I went to the SAS website, and I'm like, I have no idea what's going on here.
Yeah.
I have no idea. It's speaking a whole different language, but at the same time, there's, like, mention of CSS, so it's sort of talking to me, but it's not, you know.
The website and documentation was created by developers, and the focus, I guess, like, even the language being used is very developer-centric, and the thing about, like, people choosing less versus SAS, I think there's this perception that less is easier. And a lot of that just has to do with how they position themselves on their site and how the site looks and the language they use. And in reality, SAS is just as easy. It just has a lot more. And I think SAS shows the lot more up front very quickly. And so, you know, people are like, whoa, I don't know if this is a lot. And so our goal is to show that, yeah, it's way more powerful, but it's also just as easy.
Right.
So that's our huge number one goal with the new SAS site.
Yeah, I think Chris Coyer also has a less versus SAS blog post where he mentions, like why he kind of picks it. And he goes through a whole, like, he just really takes it apart in terms of, like, why he uses SAS. So we'll just avoid the whole religious argument right now. So just go point to Chris and Coyer and have him deal with that. That's good thinking, Chris.
Yeah.
Cool. And so you work at Do. What type of projects? Yeah, like, and social.
Yeah. So we have a web app, which, you know, has the tasks and project management, contacts, deals. Like, if you're trying to, and deals sounds very salesy, but, like, maybe it's just managing, like, projects that have money attached to it. You can actually create tasks that work towards those numbers you're looking for. So it's pretty cool. We also have an Android app and an iPhone app. And so right now I'm actually focused on the Android app, which is really interesting for me because I'm an Apple girl all the way. But it's an interesting challenge. Like, the Android UI patterns and the environment is so different. And in a lot of ways, I find them more confusing. But in a lot of ways, I think they make sense for what it is.
Like, which areas make more sense?
Well, so they have a very strict convention with the way their header, the back function. And Apple kind of goes with this more, like, drill down effect. Most apps, unless you're doing a completely unique, different app, but if you're using the typical UI conventions, you're typically going with a drill down. Mm-hmm. And Android is very big on making as many things as possible on the top layer accessible. And you can still have a little bit of that drill down, but if you can drill down to do it, then you should be able to do it on the top level too. So there's all these different, like, there's a long press you can do to bring up this contextual menu. There's actual hardware menus that you interact with, where on the iPhone it's, like, all on screen. Mm-hmm. And so there's just different things to think about. And at first I was like, this is all stupid. Why would they do it this way? But I ended up buying an Android to use for testing and started using it you know, alongside my iPhone. And I realized there are certain things that do make a lot of sense. Right. And it's not until you're kind of using it that you see that.
So you're building like a native Android app?
It's native, yeah. So,
which version of Android are you guys?
So we have a bunch of different Android devices at work. The one I have has Jelly Bean on it. It's the Samsung Galaxy. Right now, I kind of use it as a tethering device. So that's pretty handy.
So we're on AT&T, right?
I am on AT&T.
There you go. Explain that one right there.
Yeah, I'm afraid to switch to tethering because I'm grandfathered into the unlimited data plan, and if I switch, I lose that.
Right. But they capped it at 3 gigs, right? So
yeah,
like, yay, unlimited, right? So yeah, we'll have a beer later and talk about it.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I'm working on right now is the Android app. And I worked on the marketing website a little while back. And then whenever, sometimes I'll jump over to the iPhone app. Sometimes I'm working on the web app. So there's a lot of different things to work on.
So I guess you guys are targeting the Jelly Bean version of Android? Or is it just from what I'm not a big Android user. I have a couple of Android devices, mostly like the Kindle. Instead of just for testing, but I don't really have like an Android phone per se.
Yeah.
So, like, how do you? And from what I've gathered, there's like a lot of fragmentation with Android.
There is.
So how would you build an app that would target all those?
So we decided, I think Gingerbread is the lowest we're caring about. Anything before that.
And Gingerbread is.
Gingerbread was the one that was out before Ice Cream Sandwich. They're all like sweets names, like Jelly Bean, Ice Cream Sandwich, Gingerbread. I forgot what it was before that, but Froyo. Yeah, Froyo. but we decided Gingerbread was the earliest version we're going to account for. I'm curious if anyone is working on an Android app or has worked on an Android app.
Anyone?
It's so different. Every device has a different resolution, a different size, and it's not pixel-based. It's like they use these units that are kind of a relative unit. So you have to kind of think not like, I want this to be 64 pixels tall, but more of like, I want this to be flexible and fill this, you know, this much. But certain devices might be shorter, so you have to kind of make things more scalable and flexible.
Yeah, because the value of pixel as defined by the W3C has changed.
Yeah.
Because one, if I get it right, it's like pixel used to be like this
a
actual
dot.
this actual dot that you actually measure.
Right.
But then it's actually changed to almost like a retina kind of exposure where like how I hold a phone, like how I look at a desktop is like 28 inches. So a pixel might be 1/96 of an inch. But then you have like, you know, maybe a big billboard visual thing, whatever. So the pixel is actually like this humongous, like five times as big as that. So it's all relative now in terms of that. So
right. And you have to kind of like if you're making assets with the iPhone, you pretty much have two different sizes of assets and one is two times as big as the other. So that's easy math. But with Android you have like I think it's like three different ones and they're all relative units. They're not fixed units. So you have to make your assets like very differently.
do you make one version of it, or do you have to make several versions?
So I kind of make it at the largest size first, and then so this is my first Android app I'm working on, so I'm still learning it. But I know like the like an icon size. I have my 64 dp and my 32 dp and my 24 dp, and those, you know, are kind of like. I'm doing them at pixels, and then I just look at it, and if it looks blurry, then I'm like, okay, maybe I need to make it a little bigger, because the way it's being said, it's not like a fixed pixel. It's really hard to just, like, explain it.
So you're working on phones, but you'll still work on web stuff, too?
Yeah.
So let's just take a step back and say, like, one thing, like, we've been talking about at the Non-Breaking Space show, and also been doing research on this, is that, for web design that we've been in for several years now, is that we told everyone, like, hey, we don't care about browsers. We'll design for all browsers. We don't care about, you know, Windows versus Mac.
Right.
And we kind of have, like, this idea that, like, hey, we're Windows agnostic or, you know, we're OS agnostic. But it was, like, a kind of a white lie that we tell each other, like, you know, because we still had that 960 grid, right?
Right.
And so we assumed people would be serving with desktops, right? And then we still saved images. And then another thing is like, we saved images at 72 DPI, right? Or PPI or whatever. And so those two things are gone.
Right.
Like, it's that now we're truly like, oh, yeah, now we really are agnostic. Yeah. And then we have to, like, build several things, you know, several resolution images and stuff like that. So, and it sounds like there's a lot more work, right?
It is a lot more work. And I think that's why there's this whole push towards UI libraries versus static comps. Mm-hmm. And it's...
What's a static UI library?
Well, like... like in my case for Android, I don't. It's not an HTML and CSS app. It's a some sort of Java thing, or some, I don't even know what it is. But I can't just get in there and prototype it or mock it up.
Right.
And so I just document all the different UI pieces that we need, and then show them in context. And you know, I'm used to doing like live online style guides, but for this, it's you know an Android app, and so I'm doing it on a GitHub wiki.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, every time the developer's like, I need this, and I'm like, it's right there. It's on the wiki.
So it's like a pattern gallery.
Yeah, it's like, here it is. Like all the different little things you need, like here it is. And I even for the web, I feel like that's a big thing people are moving towards because it's less about these static sizes,
right.
Especially with how like now even laptops are going Retina. Everything
right.
just needs to be...
Yeah.
You know, responsive.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Apple's beat everyone to the punch, you know, pretty much with Retina. But now, like, next year, like, Intel and other manufacturers are going to come out with Retina laptops. And stuff like that.
Right.
So it's going to be, like, this crazy, crazy world. So with like, lots of blurry websites and apps.
Yeah, and to do all those individual comps would be a nightmare. So it's, like, just think about things in pieces instead. And
so as it relates to, like, web, too, like, have you changed your approach to be more... I guess vector-based or like more looser with the graphics that you make there.
Avoid Photoshop unless I need it, like maybe for textures or something.
And how crazy is that? That you say that loud? Like I avoid Photoshop now.
Yeah, I used to do everything in Photoshop, but CSS has become so like powerful that a lot of the things I need to do, I can just do in CSS, and it's all going to be scalable. So yeah, like the images thing is still like a pain in the butt.
Yeah. It's definitely so.
So
you just rely on CSS to get you through, or
yeah. In fact, most of my comping these days are just in CSS.
Right.
And I like to do the whole like start like content based and then kind of move upwards towards more fuller layouts for the larger screens. And oftentimes when I'm designing things, I have little iframes set up at different sizes. And I know that's not an accurate depiction, but it kind of helps you get a sense of, you know, what you're doing.
Right.
So,
Has anyone else started designing for Retina screens yet here in the audience? Or
one person.
Oh, Berman Painter, who's on Team SAS. I think it's going to be a big challenge down the road because...
Yeah.
Because I'll talk more about this tomorrow, but I feel like it's a thing I'm passionate about, and and I just think that we needed a new image format just to deal with this because it's like just to save variations of the images like it doesn't seem like it's gonna be.
Yeah,
it seems like something we can automate Photoshop to do more than have designers enter a manual process to like make multiple versions of the same image.
Right.
Yeah.
The other thing that gets a little frustrating for me is like I'm really into baseline grids, and when you have all these different image sizes to deal with, a lot of times those baselines will break, and it's just like, why?
Yeah, and then that brings up the whole thing like, you have the screen is totally different, you know, no one's right now or whatever, and then you have layout like the actual browser width, you know, to deal with so you don't know. So you notice a lot of response websites just have like generous helpings of white space.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, hey, there's a mountain of white space here because we don't know if we're going to scale it down or whatever. So it's interesting. I think so. So do you guys use PhoneGap at all, or you just go straight native?
We're doing a straight native Android app and a straight native iPhone app.
Okay.
And then for web stuff, the web app isn't responsive yet, but our website is responsive.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Cool. So, so PhoneGap, for people who don't know, is just like you build a web technologies as your layer, and then you just send it to PhoneGap, and then out comes baby iOS apps and baby Android apps. And then
Yeah, we had some discussion on if that was the way we wanted to go, but I think everyone just kind of wanted like straight native.
Right.
So.
and I mean, you could tell a little the difference depending on how much love went into a PhoneGap app or like, you know, whether like, especially and see how great it is or not. So, but you can tell. So, I want to get into a little side projects though. How many do you do many side projects at all? Or
personal? Yeah, I have some side projects. some abandoned side projects.
I want to talk about all of them actually. Art in My Coffee.
Yeah.
What is Art in My Coffee?
So, Art in My Coffee is exactly what it sounds like. It's just a curated, right now it's a Tumblr of coffee art images submitted by people. It started out as a personal photo blog because I like coffee art, and in San Francisco, there's a lot of places that do coffee art. And
coffee art is?
Just generally, it's usually just designs done with the way they pour the foam.
Okay.
Some baristas get a little more creative and do things with syrup or even sugar, like the way they pour the sugar. They just do all sorts of different little designs, or maybe even I've seen it done with like green teas and hot chocolates and stuff. So so I was kind of collecting photos of these things, and then people.
And by collecting, just taking a photo of your food.
Yeah, because it's temporary art. You're going to devour it. So it's nice to get a little picture of it first. And so then people started submitting photos. So Tumblr had just come out with the community features back then.
Okay.
Like the submission queue, which was awesome. So it kind of made it a lot less manual for me to take these photos and post it. So it's pretty cool.
I bet it'd be kind of invasive to like take other photos of other people's coffee before they drink it. It's like, hey, wait before you.
Yeah.
Like complete strangers, like, hey.
Yeah, and actually a lot of baristas have come to like it because they kind of like taking pictures of their own art they make and submit it and then tweet, we got featured. But we're actually, I have a couple friends from, I used to work at Engine Yard, and they used to work at Engine Yard, and they started their new development firm called Thunderbolt Labs, and they were looking for a project to work on, and so we decided to collaborate, and we're going to do an iPhone app for Art My Coffee. Mm-hmm. So it's, I mean, we're all busy, so it's a slow.
It sounds like a great thesis project to me.
Yeah, I considered it, but, you know, the sushi thing is my thesis project. Okay. But, yeah, it's moving a little slowly because, you know, we all have projects to work on and stuff, but eventually it'll be out.
But the site's still, you still...
Yeah, the submissions have slowed down a little bit because I haven't really been promoting it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's still up, still going.
And so, it's what's the address for that for people?
Artinmycoffee.com.
And then also, like I mentioned, like research for this interview, that like, you did past. You were thinking about doing an Art in My Coffee coffee book.
Yeah, so that's something I'm interested in doing. You know, I get a lot of really awesome, interesting images that aren't your typical Rosetta leaves and hearts, but like faces and kitty cats and all sorts of crazy things. And I think it would be cool to kind of put all those together into a coffee table book. You know, it kind of works, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you design it like really nice and maybe you could see it like in a coffee shop or something, like, that would be really cool. So, I don't know. One of these days, I'll get around to it.
Well, yeah, it sounds like a great side project. So, what other side projects have you been involved in?
So, I have a lot of Tumblrs. The only other one that I guess is worth mentioning just because it's funny. I follow a lot of fashion blogs, and I notice that a lot of indie kids like to post these pictures of themselves wearing their indie fashion clothes. And they're always posed with their feet crossed and looking forlorn, and they all look like they have to pee.
Mm-hmm.
And so I created this Tumblr called Hipsters Have to Pee. And it actually got like, I kept it anonymous for a while. I didn't let anyone know it was mine. And I started getting like press inquiries about it. And now it's getting weird. People are posting obvious poses of themselves. Like, it's like, it can't be where you're just like, looking like you want to, it just...
It's okay, you can say it. We're all friends here.
Yeah, I just... So. I people are just trying to be on the blog now, right. And it's not the same. So I haven't really put a lot of attention into it, but yeah, it's pretty funny. I was in Norway and I overheard somebody talking about it, so that got me pretty excited.
Well, I think it'd be a great book. Like, there's everybody poops, and then you just put like right next to it. So, yeah. I think it's a classic. I think it's gonna sell a lot.
So. Yeah. But yeah, those are pretty much my main ideas that I've been doing. I've had a couple projects here or there, but those are the ones that have stuck around. So.
Okay. I'm kind of interested in the other ideas too. Like,
I have an hardly ever updated robot blog, just called I Want Robots, because I used to collect robots, but I had to stop collecting robots because I have too many robots. Oh. let me see. I was going to work on a style guide generator, but now everybody's making a style guide generator, so I'm just going to find the one I like and use that.
So what is a style guide generator?
The idea was just letting your CSS generate a style guide, because it can be tedious work sometimes. But now there's like 3 or 4 of them out there. So
is the idea like you've already built the website? You just throw your CSS over and it's like, okay, here we go.
Well, the idea is it should just... You look at your comments and the way you've formatted your CSS and generate the documentation. And it could also it could also show like the UI element. Like maybe if you have a button with a class of submit or whatever, it would show what that looks like. So no longer going to work on that because other people are doing it.
Right.
So I've had some other ideas, but I can't think of them right now.
Okay, yeah. I was fascinated, because Aria will tell you, I have too many ideas.
Yeah.
But, I'm just fascinated with ideas that that people are passionate about that you actually work on, and then also why didn't these ideas take off or whatnot.
Right.
So it's always interesting. So anyone have any questions for Gina? Yes. What's your name and what's your...
JD.
My
name. As a UX designer,
well, see, this is the thing about the non-breaking space, right? Like, we have a thing about the future questions. Like, we don't ask future questions at non-breaking space TV because you can kill 15 minutes in an interview with asking about future or stuff like that. So, but since we're doing this live, and
we have to answer it.
Yeah, now we have to answer it. So if you want to answer the future question, but normally we wouldn't do this, JD.
Yeah,
this is for you. All right.
Yeah. The thing I'm interested in, and this is probably not really truly answering the question, but
sustainability. Yeah. I don't like the question anyway.
Sustainability, I think. Like, I mean, you could talk about. I mean, you could talk about like new devices and platforms and technologies and all that, but those are always going to be changing. So it's not really, you never know what's going to happen, but. The thing I'm noticing that's rising up and that I think is going to be even more so the case is sustainability.
Sustainability?
In
terms of?
Just food, products, people are trying to move towards more eco-friendly products. My sushi app actually focuses on sustainable sushi, which is a movement I've been interested in because if we keep eating sushi at the rate we're eating sushi, it's going to run out. So just
like tomorrow or is it
well, bluefin tuna is pretty much almost extinct.
Okay.
So for certain species, possibly tomorrow.
I apologize for the question because I'm a sushi dude.
No, I love sushi and I'd love to continue eating sushi. So I want to do it in a smart, sustainable way.
Right.
And I think a lot of things are if you look at a lot of the Kickstarter projects that are coming out, there's a lot of emphasis on sustainable maybe how much energy is being used or at least in San Francisco, everything's about, sustainable and green food and restaurants are trying to be healthier and more
future-focused. So sustainable, eco-friendly.
So, and I think that's, if we can manage to get there, that'd be really exciting because it needs to happen.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Anyone else have any questions? I will promise to like your question. No? Okay. Sorry, I just berate everyone here, by the way. There's a question up there. What's your name and what's your question?
I'm Daisy.
So Daisy, is your question like, because is web design affecting where you live?
Not necessarily web design, but like where the technology and the mentality.
So the question I for my gathering is.
It's more natural that the environment there, that the people are always.
So basically, like in San Francisco, it seems more practical to think about sustainability than in other locations and stuff like that, you know, around the world or whatever. So about right. web design and how you approach that stuff. Like, is that you find
yeah,
the case?
So, you know, I wasn't always in San Francisco. I was I'm from Tennessee, and the idea of recycling is a thing people care about in Memphis and in Nashville. I lived in both Memphis and Nashville, but San Francisco is definitely more interested in that. Like, it's actually the law. You have to compost. Right. You can actually get in trouble if you don't. but they don't really enforce it that heavily, but it is a thing. Plastic bags are banned. Mm-hmm. If you go grocery shopping, you're not going to get a plastic bag. You're going to either buy a cloth bag or get a paper bag. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if down the road even paper bags might, and I'm not sure. Unless they're, I guess, obviously they're using recycled stuff. But when it comes to the actual like industry, I don't think it's like limited to San Francisco, but it definitely helps. You know, just all the different startups that are coming out. It's so weird. You know, when I lived in Memphis, I thought it was cool that I knew someone that, you know, worked at FedEx, you know, like that to me was like cool. And then I moved to San Francisco and
Everybody's
there. It's yeah. like you got Apple and PayPal and Google and all these different companies. But then those are the big companies, yeah. and you got like all these small companies, and some of them are becoming big companies. Like even Square started out really small. And I think because like a lot of young people are becoming business owners and entrepreneurs,
right.
they're more interested in you know social and. Eco issues yeah. that's going to be a thing coming out of the city, but I don't think it's limited to there. I see it kind of spreading.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and the power of the web is leverages like one person can do so much with the web, and if you have the right skill sets, and so
right.
it doesn't take that many people. So you don't have to convince a whole organization to change. And so
yeah.
you see it definitely coming from the foundation up. So yeah. One more question, if there is one from the audience, like up there. So Holly asked the age-old question of, you seem like you're busy. How do you manage your schedule? Is that right?
I use Do. Product placement. I also drink whiskey. No, I'm very stressed a lot, admittedly.
Because when I drink whiskey and I do a to-do list, it doesn't really, I don't
yeah.
do that very well.
No, that's usually like after a full day okay. of getting things done. Okay. But no, I go through phases of time where I realize I've taken on too much mm-hmm. and I have to sometimes let one thing suffer to let the other things get completed. I've definitely struggled with that. It's not something I have down pat,
right.
and I constantly struggle with it. But the thing is, like, I just have all these things I want to do, mm-hmm. and so I try my best to make time for it. Yeah, I can't honestly give you a good answer on that because I'm still figuring it out.
Yeah, and I also think time management is a personal thing too.
It's funny that I'm working at a company that cares about time management and working together because I'm terrible at that stuff. Right.
It's like Merlin Mann, who is like 43 folders.
Right.
Is like, he's not the best person for running. He's a great guy. I love him. Like, he actually came from Tallahassee, by the way.
Yeah. I think it's awesome. Funny. Like, imagine how much work we would get done if we would stop making productivity apps.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. But I love working at Do.
So the question we always ask at the end is, sure. What are you most passionate about now? Either like the web, mobile, like space?
I'm getting really into mobile, and I've always been interested in mobile, but right now I'm really enjoying it. But I also really enjoy building things too, and so that's kind of the struggle I have right now. Is I can't really build mobile apps. I can design them. Mm-hmm. So I want to try to find the time to learn some of that stuff. But I like mobile. I didn't think I would ever say this, but I'm actually really enjoying working on the Android app.
Yeah.
My dad would be like, what? Yeah. If he found that out. But no, it's fun because they have different constraints. And yeah. So it's interesting. I like it.
So you just like designing for the Android and that's awesome. That's
yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I really like the Android app. The first one, the first device I love is the Nexus 7. I'm not sure if you played around with the Nexus
7. I haven't.
7. No. Yeah, it's like the best Android thing I've ever seen. So, but yeah, so thank you so much for being with us. But how can people find you on the web? Do you want to follow up with any questions?
Yeah, well, my Twitter is just my first name, Gina. It's spelled with a J. And my website is sushiandrobots.com, but it's, you know, there's not much up there right now. Yeah. So, yeah, mostly, I think most of my, I guess, online presence is Twitter. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks to Gene, the Converge Flutter crew, and volunteers for making this possible. Thank you so much. Thanks everyone for coming out. If you would, just please, you know, find us up on nonbreakingspace.tv. You can just rate us up on iTunes and also on Facebook, also on Twitters. Thanks to Gina Bolton for being with us today.
Thanks for
awesome.
Having me.
And I hope you guys see you guys on the next show. Thank you.